Now, not surprisingly, we've done a lot of stories connected with the big galleries this year on Weekend Arts. GOMA, the NGV, the Art Gallery of New South Wales. But some of the most interesting shows I've seen in 2012 have happened in smaller and independent galleries. The University of Queensland Art Museum has had some great stuff, a brilliant Polly Borland photographic retrospective, and now another major retrospective from a leading Australian contemporary artist, the sculptor Lindy Ivamy, who joins me now. Lindy makes complex, strange and deeply affecting sculptures of human figures and animals, out of bone, fabric, hair, teeth, gemstones, a whole range of surprising and often highly personal objects. If listeners have seen a piece by you, Lindy, they'll remember it. Walking through the galleries of your exhibition at the UQ Museum is very different than seeing rooms of photographs or of paintings.
Yes. Yeah, I do hear that a lot. Sculpture is completely without function for, I guess, anyone except those who make it. It's just there to be felt and seen. And, yes, walking through a room of objects that are like that is a very personal experience. It's very subjective.
And I think there's something about the fact that, yes, all sculpture has this 3D aspect that engages with a viewer differently, but the fact that these are figurative, that they're little people and little animals, there's a very affecting aspect because of that. I think just as humans, we respond to beings.
Yeah, it's the most recognised form in the world is human. We know when it's right, when it's wrong, when it's big, when it's small.
Or if your head's made out of a paintbrush or a chicken bone and you can still recognise it as a shape.
Well, yeah, and sometimes with those works, your teeth, your tongue might be more familiar than your eyes with what you're experiencing because you've chewed on a bone, you've taken a drumstick out of your mouth, a chicken wing, you've cleaned up the wishbone with your teeth and your lips and your fingers, and it's now represented as a pearl-embellished crown on a little prince.
Is that part of what has drawn you, and you've been working with objects like bone for a long time, is that part of what drew you to that material, is the fact that we have a familiarity with it even if we're not conscious of it a lot of the time?
No, I think that's quite a sophisticated thought, and I don't think that was at the front of my mind when bone became interesting. It was more the potential of making a wish with a wishbone. It was more a childhood folly, really. It was collecting all five knuckles over a few months to make a game of knuckles with your sisters. I don't think it was as sophisticated as I can see them now.
It's lucky you weren't raised in a vegetarian household, Lindy, or your whole practice might have been very different.
Funnily enough, when I did the Heidi show, I was working with the curator, Kelly Galatley, there, and she was a vegetarian, and she said, I think we might have to do only certain days at your place when you're not doing, you know, big bone-cleaning expeditions. But, she ended up being, and I don't know if she's quite a carnivore, but I know she was sneaking tins of sardines in towards the end.
It's a health warning for vegetarians before you go and visit Lindy's show, perhaps. When you started working with fish bones, chicken necks seemed to be, were you always doing them en masse? Because that's what's so striking about a lot of the works there, is that there's hundreds, thousands of them, often knitted together.
No, initially I went to Claremont Art School in Perth, and one of the guys that I shared a house with, who was also a sculpture major, he was a Kiwi and he taught me how to cure bone in the Māori tradition. And we'd hang out in our studio and carve bone. It was beef femur, and it was cured in the proper and correct traditional way. And it was enjoyable, but it didn't feel natural. And really only when I started having lots and lots of bones did I feel less precious about them and more greater freedom. It's a very strong armour at times too. It's a highly symbolic material.
There's a fetishistic kind of aspect of bones, isn't there? Your friend and collector, the Australian philanthropist extraordinaire Simon Mordaunt, opened the exhibition, and he said that he's lent a lot of works to it. He said that he and his wife feel the absence of those pieces in their home.
That
must have
really
been quite moving.
Moved me, and I know that he speaks sincerely. He's a man that doesn't waste his breath. I've seen the sculptures. I visit them at his place, and they take beautiful care of all of their works. And I quite imagine that they would miss them. One of the pieces that they have loaned the exhibition is a piece called The Little Emperor, and it's a life-size baby sitting in a Victorian high chair, and he really is taking command. And I believe that they got that with the intention of having it at the head of their dining room table. And I've seen where it lives in their home, and it leaves a gap.
Yeah. And that's interesting. How do people who are lucky enough to own some of your sculptures, how do they live with them? What have you seen when you visit houses where your work has ended up?
It's partially a sculpture placement / adoption service. They mean something to them. It's a big decision to commit some space in your home to sculpture. It's not as easy as just changing the wall space from a clock to a painting or a photo. You need to dedicate some space to it, and you need to look after it. It's a decision to keep a sculpture.
Some of the works are described as self-portraits, which is interesting because they don't resemble you physically. In what way are they? In what way are these bunnies and other beings self-portraits?
They're self-portraiture strictly when they're bunnies, because my nickname is Bunny. But a lot of the works carry a great deal of self in them too. It might be hair or things that I don't need anymore. I will invest inside them, and I don't know, they're charm bracelets.
One of the bunnies is a big bunny. It's actually called Thumper.
Someone who just couldn't come to terms with calling me Bunny chose Thumper. Tough Lindy.
It's got, it has a beautiful butterfly.
The butterfly is made out of snapper bones, turkey, and I think chicken bone, duck, actually. That Thumper is a really hopeful, re-emerging, contemplative moment that I was having. And a butterfly is just such a strong symbol of emerging, newfound interest. Yes, it's a little quiet conversation between Thumper and that butterfly. It's a little thank you for a bright glimpse of some future.
The works are grouped by chronology but then given these sort of different thematic titles at the exhibition, which has been curated beautifully by Louise Martin Chu. One of the groupings is Child's Play, and I think the comment that Louise makes with those images that these all sort of suggests that this isn't a portrait of an actual childhood but of an imagined or a longed-for childhood. That's an interesting way of looking at autobiography in work too, isn't it? It doesn't have to be the literal life lived, but the life imagined or yearned for.
Yeah. Another aspect to that is our imaginations are very fertile. Our memory is possibly fertile, but incredibly destructive. And what we remember, particularly of childhood, are, you know, often really inaccurate memories. You can't rely on memory terribly well. So imagined, forgotten, remembered, reclaimed, reorganised, restated, they're aspects of childhood. She has curated it in an interesting way. Louise is predominantly a writer, and I feel that she organised the exhibition in chapters. And that was a great way for her to break it down and manage such a huge volume of work. I think there are over 50 works in there.
One of the recent pieces is constructed from a very different material. It looks very different from other works. Rather than using bone, it's made out of champagne labels. It's a beautiful celebratory work. I mean, literally in terms of champagne the material, and also the way it looks.
He's beautiful.
And he's shiny and
he's
golden.
He's just so handsome. He's actually cast from a mould that I've used before, and the other brothers of his from the same mould are in the exhibition as well. He does have bone hands, but he is made of completely gold French champagne tops. And he's a true celebration. He is part of him, and part of his armour has been present at every celebration that I've encountered over the last 15 years. And he's got beautiful brim pearls. I actually have him in my kitchen, and in the morning at a particular time of year when the sun comes in and it goes through a chandelier, it just sends all these sparkles all around the room, and it just lights up the day, truly.
Is he one that you could bear to part with?
No. Don't think so. I put him into an exhibition earlier this year, and I was so relieved that he didn't go anywhere but come home, and I don't think I could let him go now. Not again. I put him out there once to brave it.
Then you brought him back to the nest.
Yeah.
As well as curating this exhibition, Louise Martin Chu has put together the first book on your work, which was launched at the opening night. How was that experience for you as an artist, having that enforced, sustained reflection on your life, on your career?
I think it was like a prolonged tattoo. I think it was something that was noisy and painful and itchy and caused me to bleed and just went on and on and on and on. And it wasn't always comfortable.
And what about the result? Are you happy with your tattoo? You're not going to go and get laser surgery on that.
No, I love the book. I love the book, and I'm very pleased with it. It's been a combination of so many people and working with other people. I normally work on my own. And while I found getting to the text with Louise, the sort of maybe it's more a wound opening than a tattooing, but she's very gentle and very pleasant, and it was okay, but it was still very confronting. Reading the text for the first time, it was only text. It was words in black and white, and it was very difficult. But then we started to choose images, and the images started to get mixed with font types and textures of paper, and design aspects came in, and the text became part of a whole, and it is a whole thing, and I think it's okay to say it's a beautiful book.
It's okay to say it's a beautiful book, definitely.
Yeah, it is lovely, and it's got Thumper, and yeah, I think Thumper on the front's nice and strong for it.
Indeed it is. Thank you, Lindy Ivamy. Lindy's retrospective, If Pain Persists, is on show at the University of Queensland Art Museum in Brisbane until March next year.